Deputy Secretary, can we confirm that we have a quorum?
Recording in progress.
Hi, good morning, Chairperson and everyone on the platform. Chair, we correct. Shall I proceed with the roll call, Chair?
Please.
Chair, Mr. Mbuyani.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues. I'm present. Thank you.
Good morning.
Chair, Mr. Mulder.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all. I'm present.
Good morning.
Chair, Mr. Malamakia.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. I'm present.
Good morning.
Chair, Mr. McPherson. He's on the platform, Chair.
I'm there. Thank you.
Good morning.
Mr. Thring, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
Chair, Mr. Burns Namashi, Chair.
Molo Slalo Namalungu.
Molo, member.
Ms. Mutahum. She's on the platform, Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Kaspers, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Ms. Muatse, Chair. Chair, both are on the platform.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
Those are all the members currently on the platform, Chair.
Yeah, we have a fairly full house. Good morning. Thank you. Can we have the agenda, please? Thank you very much. Here we have the agenda. Are there any apologies, Committee Secretary?
Chair, today I have not received any apologies, Chair. There's only one member that's not on the platform.
Yes.
We will assume that he will be joining us shortly, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we have a move and a seconder for the adoption of this agenda?
Ms. Mutahum, Chair.
Ms. Mutahum.
Yes, Chair, I move for adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. Can I have a seconder?
Ms. Muatse, Chair.
Honorable Muatse.
Thank you, Chairperson. I second the move of the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. We then move into our agenda. The purpose of us meeting here today is to continue our deliberations on the remitted bills, in particular the proposed amendments with respect to the public submissions received in relation to the Copyright Amendment Bill. And we will debate on the deliberations as prepared by Advocate Panamerva and the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. Thank you very much. Can I ask Advocate Pandemerva, or is it Dr. Masocha, will lead our deliberations today?
Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Pandemerva, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to share my screen. Okay, I've received two documents for the committee. The one is the updated table that was sent out, and all the additional recommendations are contained in that. And then also just a document with the actual wording that is proposed, just to make it a bit easier for members to see what we are talking about. So I hope that it will come out well. What should happen is the committee should currently be seeing a table, and then an additional document will pop up. And then that is how I propose I take members through this. Would that be in order, Chair?
Yes, thank you very much, Edward. Proceed.
Thank you. And I'm also going to just stop my video to make sure that we get the best reception on your side. So, Chair, the first amendment proposed was, or ought to be discussed and considered by the committee, is the definition of accessible format copy. Now, this was actually not advertised, so to a great extent it was already agreed to by the committee, but it was brought up in the discussions on the second adverts submissions because there were some concerns raised by the public about the word including two. Now, in this document at the bottom, you'll see that it the wording in blue, that was the proposed inclusion. And the response from the department in this regard was that the words including two are actually already in the treaty. So in other words, it just aligns this definition more with the treaty. The concern from the public was not so much about this word including two, but more about the fact that this bill goes further than simply allowing for persons with a sight disability. This bill goes further and includes all persons with a disability. And of course, that is because of our constitution. It provides for all persons with a disability, not just for those with a sight disability. So, Chair, shall I stop there and allow the committee to consider this specific amendment before we proceed?
Yes, I think let's check if there's anybody who has any clarity-seeking questions or inputs on what you've just presented. So we'll go clause by clause. Can I see by a show of hands, members? I don't see any hands. So I think we are fine. I think let's proceed as good.
Thank you, Chair. The next one to consider is the definition of authorized entity. Now, authorized entity has to do with, again, the section that deals with persons with a disability. And this was a new proposal, and it was to align with the bill with the treaty. And what this provides for is just that there will be an authorized entity. We also have a regulations clause that is linked to this phrase, authorized entity. And this would be a body that will be authorized and recognized by government to assist persons with a disability. So in other words, it just gives some clarity on who it is that we are dealing with when we're looking at accessible format copies being made. And the proposal from both my side and from the department side is that the wording be retained as advertised. There was some concern about the use of government institution or non-profit organization. But if we look here, we see that it is very clear. There's a specific addition to the definition. It identifies who we are talking with about. We are talking about institutions or organizations that provide education, instructional training, adaptive reading, or information access to persons with a disability. Chair, I will just stop there for now. That is in respect of this definition.
Thank you very much. Any inputs, members? Okay, I don't see any hands. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So the next, I will fix that now. The next discussion is in respect of broadcast. And what happened here was that the proposal was to bring the definition of broadcast in line with the definition that appears in the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. And so that was the one decision. And it seems that there was a concern in general about the definition of broadcast, because there's a lot of discussion currently undergoing about what the correct definition should be. The recommendation in that regard from both the department and our office is that at this point in time, because those discussions are still underway, let us at least align the two acts, the Copyright Act and the Performers Protection Act, so that at least in those two, the definition of broadcast is the same. And then, of course, as these talks develop, we can bring in another definition. But we cannot hold this bill up or these bills up for those discussions. We don't even know when they will be completed. The next issue that came in on the definition of broadcast was whether to include wire or retain only wireless means for transmission. And the input from the public was that in South Africa, both wire and wireless means are used in respect of transmission, and therefore the proposal is to keep the definition, align the two acts, and retain the word wire. And thank you, Chair, and I'll just stop there for now.
Thank you. I know this came up in our meeting yesterday, so can I just check if there's any further clarities? I see Honourable Malamacha has unmuted. Honourable Malamacha.
Oh, sorry, Chair. Let me take this. I thought there will be a way of whether we support or not, because if it just goes and goes silent as we are, I'm not sure if it is the right chairperson, but I will say there should be a way to say we support, we agree. The time when I was raising, I think we were at number two. I wanted to support, but for the mere fact that there's no format to say we agree or don't agree, I found myself wanting. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Honorable Nguyani.
Chairperson, thank you very much. On this issue, I wanted clarity yesterday and was told that will be given today. So I just want to check if we remove the wire, we keep the wireless, what is going to happen in terms of the wire transition? Because we still have transition like wires, connectivity and so forth. So I just want to check, are we going to deal with this issue of international laws and stuff? Because internationally, wire and wireless is agreed. But to those developed countries, which they now use in wireless connection. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then on Honorable Malamacha's question about whether we are going to agree, we are still deliberating, Honorable Member, on the proposed amendments. So we're not at the stage yet where we are finalizing, so we are still speaking and looking at what is presented to us and to further deliberate going forward. I see Honourable McPherson's hand. Honourable McPherson.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Chair, I just want to just repeat the point that I repeated yesterday, just for the record, that we as the DA are deeply uncomfortable about this process, about where it's going. So, we are not making any more comments or inputs into the process, because we believe the process is not in the best interests of legislation. So I just want to just repeat that, you know, any silence or non-participation or non-inputs is not considered consent. We will put our position forward at the appropriate time when we consider the different options that are before us. But we feel that there's no point and no need to make any comments or inputs at this stage again. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Mbuyani, I see your hand is up again.
It's an old hand, Chair, but given the space, I think, yes, we are not yet on the deliberation. And we are still engaging on the matter. We cannot take a decision right now. We'll continue with deliberation until we find each other with Comrade McPherson. Thank you.
Okay, Comrade McPherson. Okay, Honorable Mulder.
Once again, good morning, Chair. Good morning, all present. Chair, I just wanted to repeat what I said yesterday. I asked a specific question on the process that's lying ahead of us and some serious, outstanding, crucial issues. And that's a good for the member explained what the process is, what's possible and what's not possible. But I must also just say that the Freedom Front Plus is also comfortable with the process that we're following now, as we are correcting certain portions of the act in paragraphs, and I believe that we should take a total different stance on this, but I will also comment later. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That's noted and in the record. Thank you, Honourable Mulder. Honourable, Advocate van der Merwe, if you can respond to the question, I think it came from Honourable Mbuyani, please.
Thank you, Chair. In fact, Ms. Mbuyani hit the nail on the head there. So the proposal was to align, try and align internationally and so on and remove wire. But there was a clear indication from the public that South Africa is not ready for wire to be removed from this definition. So our recommendation is definitely that wire must be included, because if we don't include it, we will be excluding a number of broadcasters, and they will not be able to either make use of the exceptions provided by this act or the protections provided to them. So it is definitely our recommendation that wire must be included in the definition.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mbuyani, is that still a legacy hand, or do you have input on this one again?
Often called a pensioner's hand, Mr. Mbuyani.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the clarity. I think I'm covered now.
Okay.
Given the fact that if we will we'll take out the wire, we'll have serious problems. Looking at our country in South Africa, we still have to develop in terms of the fourth industrial. So if we do that, we might be leaving out most of our broadcasters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I understand the argument and the response from the Advocate van der Merwe that South Africa is not ready for us to remove wire, because a large percentage of our population still, it would exclude, if we were to do that, if we were to remove wire, it would exclude a large portion of our population. The challenge, however, I think that's been the argument, is the treaties that South Africa has signed and whether this then becomes incompatible with international law. So I also understand that there's this balancing act that one has to weigh in here, and that is servicing and making this applicable and relative to the South African situation. But on the other hand, on international law, it appears to indicate that wire, when it comes to broadcasting, it is wireless and wireless only. So will that not then necessarily mean that we are in contravention of the treaty that we have signed? And how do we actually get around that? That's international treaties, and how do we get around that?
Thank you, Honourable Thring. Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will also ask Dr. Masocha maybe just to add on to this. But what I can just say is, firstly, and this is going to sound a bit facetious, and I apologize for that, but I'm just stating a fact. We have not yet signed all the treaties that there's some of these treaties that still have to be signed. Those that we are a party to and those that we will still sign, even if there is this requirement, any international treaty must be made applicable to the country that signed. So in other words, treaties are never, the wording of treaties are always some form of compromise, because countries have such different laws. And what a treaty is to say we've got a number of different countries that want to achieve something. And in order to achieve that, it would be good for us these following 15 countries to work together towards this goal. But these 15 countries have very different circumstances in their domestic law, in their own, on the ground. And therefore, a treaty is always written in some form of a compromise, and there's always some form of flexibility. So, for instance, yesterday I explained that it would speak about effective implementation instead of saying that you must have offences, for instance. So there's always a lot of leeway given in treaties because of that situation. But also, in the end, if we look at what we have here, your treaty can be seen as best practice, and that is where we are heading, but we are not there yet. So once a South African can say, okay, we have now out, we're done with wire, we don't no longer have to make provision for it, then we can go. So in short, we will not be in breach of international law. We need to show that we are trying to make what the treaty intends as much part of our law as it can be the case. Also keep in mind the other side of this coin when we look at international law. If we don't provide for wire as part of broadcasting, what is going to happen on the ground? We are probably going to have a situation where people are operating without a law governing them. It is not just simply that it will stop. So there we would actually be amiss if we do not in some way or manner provide for people who are still doing transmissions by wire. If I may ask Dr. Masocha if she maybe has something to add to you, Chair.
Dr. Masocha?
Morning, Chair. Morning, honorable members, morning advocates, and also to the colleagues from the department and all in the platform. Yes, Chair, in terms of the flexibilities of treaties, when there are different schools of thought, Chair, because there are those who are of the view that a treaty should be read verbatim, so meaning that it should be taken in as it is provided in the text where it was adopted. However, the treaties were formulated in discussions from different countries, and so in every country there's a context, as advocate has indicated, and so we have the treaties, and then we have our own constitution, and we have our own developmental context. So it is in our context, and also from the views of other international law experts and our local experts, the view is that even from the Vienna Convention, there are those flexibilities that in a context of a country, even though the treaty is provided with certain texts that have to be attended to, countries can have those flexibilities, especially when they don't reduce the rights that are provided by that treaty. So, for instance, the example I will give, which is maybe taking us back, is around the Marrakesh Treaty. In the Marrakesh Treaty, the provisions are for the visually impaired and print disabled beneficiaries. It is the minimum that it has provided. But then we looked at our developmental context. We looked at the other rights of persons with disabilities to say, shouldn't this be opened up to ensure that we provide for human rights in our constitution, we provide for access to learning materials and so on. So the same will apply in this context of wire. And just to add also, in other countries, developed countries, I have seen an example of one or two laws where wire is included, even in the developed country that is aware of the WIPO copyright treaty and the treaties that talks to the issues of wire or wireless and the WPPT, for instance. So we are of the view that even when we remove wire, we may not be referring to wireless as in the treaty, but we are not violating the requirements in terms of not adhering to that treaty. But then again, as I've indicated, there are those who are of the view it should be verbatim as provided for in that treaty. But we think that in line with our constitution, our developmental context, removing wire in this current situation we are in, it is ideal. And that should always be taken into account. They must be brought into our domestic context, looking at the constitution, looking at our economic context, and of course making sure that there is no contradiction. But that is allowable. It's something that countries do consider when applying the treaties. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Dr. Masocha, I think we can move on. Oh, I see there's other hands. Honorable Burns, Namashi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. What I just want to add as well as a rider to the issue under discussion is the extent of the approval by the parliament, because I mean of course while I appreciate that the signing of treaties is an executive function, however it also has to be approved by the parliament for it to be functional. Now, Advocate Father Merve, in her input, she did indicate that some of these treaties have not yet been signed. Even if they were signed, supposing that they were signed, the question I would have asked the advocate would be whether those would be practicably applicable without having been approved by Parliament, which is a requirement in terms of Section 231. Thank you.
Very much. Honorable Thring.
Chair, now just a short follow-up question, just with regards to the parties that will be affected if WIA is removed. So if the legal, our legal eagles there could indicate which sectors of the population, broadcasters, will be affected by the removal of WIA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That's based on our proposal that we're including WIA. You just want to know the impact.
Yes.
Do not. Okay.
No. Just if WIA, for example, were to be removed,
yes.
Which sectors?
Okay.
Which sectors would be affected if it were to be removed? Sectors, broadcasters, who would be affected?
Okay. Thank you. That's good.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, so first, the first question was, so let's say we have signed these treaties. If they haven't been signed, to what extent can we already make provision for them, in our laws? That's how I understood it. How practically, should we be applying them in our law? And I think the answer is simply that these treaties are a couple of countries coming together trying to put together best practice. So there is nothing wrong for South Africa to consider treaties as best practice and then align our laws accordingly. So it's very, very possible for us to do so. It is just that we are doing it without having agreed to it, that we will be aligning as such. We are simply doing it because of best practice. Also, just from a practicality point of view in respect of the legislative process, it is good for the committee to keep in mind that, these treaties are there, that are being considered for signing off and to be considered by Parliament and ratified. And in other words, if we stray too broadly from these treaties, we need to know why. We need to just make sure that we understand the context, even though we are not currently obliged to have our law exactly as the treaties, have the proposals and the guidelines. it would be good for us to just keep them in mind in any event. In respect of the wire and the sectors, again, if I may ask Dr. Masocha to just answer that question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Masocha?
So in terms of the wire and the sectors that are affected by wire, we first, in terms of the comments that we have received from the public, they did indicate that there are industries or those who rely on this transmission format that will be affected. In terms of the research that we have done, we tried to look at this even from the first round of comments in terms of what does this really mean and who are affected. So there is wire means of transmission that will be impacted. So an example I will give, and it's subject to correction, but I will give this example where we looked at community-based radio stations that do not have access to digital means of wireless communication, the sophisticated stations that we know. And one example was a community radio that uses a battery transmission. They have a way of reaching the communities by using a transmission with a battery in that format. So that was one practical example I could find. But it's something that maybe we can look further into by trying to get into more specifics of the other related wire transmission types of sectors. But an example would be a community-based radio station that does not have the sophisticated tools, the digital tools of transmission. And some of the areas we are talking about are deep rural areas where there's no access to information. They rely on these communication methods. So that would be, if we were to remove this, for instance, in the South African context, then you will have many communities that don't have access to any information, whether it's about elections, basic service delivery issues, education issues, and so on. So when I saw that example and we debated it with colleagues, we debated it with the advocate, we were of the view that we need to be careful that the unintended consequences don't go further into even community level where our communities don't have access to basic information portals. There are areas where access is an issue. Even if you drive through certain areas of the country, you'll see that there's there are transmission issues. Suddenly you can't have access to certain services that you will have in a more in the metros and so on. So there is that. We are still in a country that has got dualities of development. So that should always be taken into consideration in the context of the global developments and trends. So as much as we want to ensure that we are internationally compliant, we also need to make sure that we take our dynamics, our societal issues into consideration. So some of them is a matter of we acknowledge that we should be aligned, but where are we now? What is our baseline context? So I will stop on that one, but we can look further into other examples. But that's the best example I could think of based on the research and discussions that we had. I agree with the Honorable Ngamashe about the treaties and how they are adopted. I'll take this angle about the approval processes to indicate that in terms of some of the treaties that we are talking to now, like the WIPO copyright treaty that talks to issues of your technological protection measures, we have, some of them have been through the parliamentary processes, and we took them through the processes, and they were adopted by both houses of parliament, and they could be finalized in terms of deposited. They are at that stage where they could be deposited, but because we are working on these processes with the bills, they are put on hold. So there are processes that we have undertaken, and the exception would be there are those that we could not go into because of legal opinions and so on, but just to give that assurance that we are aware that there are processes that we need to undertake to get the treaties ratified or acceded by the country. So we have started those processes, but Parliament has also adopted some of them so far. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair, that's my final follow-up, Chair.
Okay.
thank you, Chair. Chair, I think that the example that the advocate has used on with regards to radio and the radio stations being affected, your community radio stations being affected, if we were to remove wire from the bill or the amendments. I understand that your community radio stations, there are those who would use a battery, or some of them, they use inverters, whatever the case is, to charge up the station. But your radio stations essentially are wireless because, you know, you have radio waves, sound waves, and that's wireless. And maybe the other question would be, these concerns, were they raised by the community radio stations themselves in these submissions, or were these concerns raised by others? So were there submissions by the community radio stations saying that, you know, this is how we are going to be affected, but essentially community radio stations, radios, you know, by definition, it is wireless. Your connection may be a battery or electricity, but I'm not sure whether the wireless and the battery operated has any relevance to wire. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to Honorable Tswaku. You may
Hello, Chair.
Proceed. Yes.
Yes, Chair. No, I wanted to also just to to get the clarity from the use of the wire, and then maybe just to, I think the man also is law from the Department of Trade and Industry. I think that might be a wrong example. As Member Singh said, it's a wireless, it's the radio waves. Yeah, well. But I was thinking that, just thinking deep in terms of maybe the examples of the wireless transmission, maybe broadcast. But it's not a the broadcast, but you can transmit images and sound. I mean, when you the things of the networking and where you are connecting one computer to another. But I'm trying to think, and also I don't think that it is a good example because you're not actually not doing the broadcasting. You are just transmitting information from one PC to another one. Even with the fiber, you just, it's not the transmission. So I don't think that at this point in time there are any wire. The transmission of wire, I think it was way back when people used to use a tin this side, and then another person will take another tin on the other side and put a wire between the themselves and talk. So that's like ages, very, very much ages ago. So I'm very interested in the department to give us a concrete example of that, the wire. I don't have a problem. I don't think I have any issues, but let us get a proper example in terms of where is the wire broadcasting using wire. Okay, and then the other one is on the issue of the treaties. So if the treaties are not approved yet, why are we using them? So so I'm actually a bit confused now. I thought these treaties that we are including in this bill, those are the treaties that have been approved, signed by the executive. So why are we putting the cart before the horse, something like that. Okay. Why are we so forward to really adopt these treaties without being approved, or are they approved and all of that? No, thank you very much, Chair. Ngiyabulela.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Tswaku. Dr. Masocha?
Thank you, Chair. As when I started to respond, I did indicate that I might be wrong. I didn't put that forward. And I did indicate that we did look into this and that was the example we could find. And I do take the point by Honorable Tsering and Honorable Tswaku. And we also indicated that we can also look further into it. So, but also from the public submissions, there was an indication that there should be, we should look at, into the issue of wire, because there is still wire transmission. And then in terms of whether we have heard from the radio stations, of course not. Even in the submissions, we haven't received anything from them. I haven't seen anything from them. So what I can say to the committee is that we can look further into it if it's an area that they would like to get a better understanding into. And I think that is it's a gray area, so we can also look further into it. But our response was informed by the way we looked at it and also by the advice from the public participation. But the points that they've raised is noted. So it's something that we can look into further. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Advocate Sandra Merva.
Thank you, Chi. And if I may abuse the fact that you've handed over to me and just add a little bit on this issue of wire. It's a bit difficult because I'm sharing my screen, so I can't really go in between my documents. But I found that we had a submission from the National Association of Broadcasters, E-Media Investments. They represent ETV. They all have indicated that wire is still used in South Africa. In fact, they were saying that it is, the summarized version that I've got says, you know, it's broadcasting by wire is a technological form of broadcasting which follows the proliferation of over-the-air broadcasting and is still used in South Africa today. And a note that I've made from our discussions with the department is that the Department of Communications and Digital Technology hasn't yet transitioned South Africa from wire and wireless to only wireless. So I think that was, I do apologize. It sounds a bit like we treading on water here, but it is a lot of information and it was a lot of submissions. And to put your hand immediately on that specific one is not always possible. But so that was mainly the two submissions that we considered. I think both of those were in respect of television. And that is then where we were concerned that we might be cutting out those people who are still using wire in respect of broadcasting. Gina, now I've abused the fact that you've handed it back to me. I don't know, may I continue to the next one or if there may be some questions on what I've just said?
I don't see any hands, so I think let's continue. We're still deliberating, so it's fine. You can move on to the next one. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. The next issue to consider is the definition of lawfully acquired. Now, Chair, this was a proposal that was brought because of the personal copies. And personal copies was one of those areas where there was quite a lot of concern. And the proposal was that we need to be more strict on this. So wording was proposed to say that you may only make a copy from something that was lawfully acquired, and we then defined it, and that was advertised. But the response from the public was quite overwhelming, that this would take us back, it would actually remove some exceptions that are currently in the Act, that are currently allowed by the Copyright Act in respect of personal copies. And there was also the comment that, you know, the courts need to have some flexibility. Apologies. The courts need to have some flexibility. Your Act can't be so strict that the court can't look at the facts before it in each case and apply its mind. And so the proposal from both myself and the department is that when it comes to personal copies, the wording of the bill before the advert should remain, and we should not include this definition of lawfully acquired or make mention of it in the text of the bill. Chair, I'll first just pause there.
Thank you. Can I see if there are any inputs, any hands, any clarities? None. I think you can move on, Abscript. Oh, there's Honorable Tswaku.
Hi, Chair. So, morning, Chair. So I wanted to just to check something, Chair. There's some notes here that I've put in terms of that lawfully acquired. I wanted to check when you're saying that it's lawfully acquired. This thing is actually lawfully acquired. Does it mean that, let's say myself, I buy it, I buy a CD or something, and then my brother borrows it from me, and then he plays it or uses it. Does it mean that my brother now has lawfully acquired it? And then also this lawfully acquired or access, whatever you can call it, how are we going to monitor it and how do you regulate it? That's actually sort of the line of thought I had when I was actually looking into this. Is there any response from the advocate?
Advocate Pandemava?
Mr. Mbuyani also raised his hand, Chair.
Oh, okay. Let's take the Honorable Mbuyani's hand first and then the advocate can respond. Honorable Mbuyani.
Thank you, Chair. The other issue is the private copying exception in Section 12B, 1 Roman Figure 1. It's overly broad as it could apply in the private copies that were unlawfully acquired, which will not comply with the third step. So the retaining of the definition, lawful acquired in the contents of the private copying exception to ensure that the exception is adequate, scooped, and complies with the three step. I think if that is the case, Chair, we'll agree that privately and the lawful acquired can retain it in the peak. Thank you.
Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, in fact, both questions are two sides of a coin, and if I may respond to it almost as one. We currently in the Copyright Act have provision for personal copies to be made, for private copies to be made. And the way the wording is in the bill before it was amended, before we added lawfully acquired, did in my view, in my office's view, comply with our constitution, that comply with the three-step test. In fact, yesterday when I explained the issue of whether it should comply with fair practice or extend justified by the purpose, that was exactly what we considered was a three-step test. So the proposal that will still come is that a personal copy must be compatible with fair practice. And what that actually says, if we look at the guideline to the Berne Convention, it says the personal copies or the private copies that you've made must be in accordance with the three-step tests, legs of the three-step test, if I can call it like that. So fair practice, including that in personal copies, will be sufficient to make it compliant with three-step test. And adding the lawfully acquired actually brought about the exact question that Mr. Tswaku was raising now. Because the question comes up, someone borrows the CD from Mr. Tswaku's brother borrows the CD from him. He puts it in his computer. The computer automatically makes some form of copy to some extent in order to be able to play that CD. That act in itself becomes an infringement of copyright because of the strict way in which lawfully acquired is worded. And that can never have been the intention
you know, for something like that to be an infringement. The idea is that Mr. Twapa's brother should not borrow the CD, go and make 5 copies for him and you know, his wife, his children, or whoever, or even sell them, even worse. That is the kind of thing that we're trying to prevent. A personal copy must be for your own personal use. You quickly borrow the CD because you like the song. You just want to listen to it. Maybe you want to decide if you want to buy the CD yourself. And but all of these things need to be considered on its own facts. And that is why it is important for the Act not to be too restrictive. We do comply with the treaties if we include fair practice, but we don't have to go further and add the issue of lawfully acquired, which makes it so strict that we have totally unintended consequences. Another example that was given was, and this would be in an office context, you have persons using a specific manual or a textbook. And one colleague, the office has one copy that is being used, and you have to go and take it out of the library and you open it on your desk and you use it. And another colleague suddenly needs the same exact textbook, but they only need one page, and they quickly make a copy of that page. But the way that we have lawfully acquired here means that it does not include a copy which has been borrowed. So you can't say, oh, but I just quickly made this from the book that I borrowed from my colleague. And I mean, those kind of instances of personal copies should be allowed. They are currently allowed under the Copyright Act. We shouldn't go back and make it more strict unless that is a specific policy decision that we want to make it more strict. But I've not been, had that impression from discussions in this committee that we want to make it more strict. It is just that we want to make sure that we comply with the best practice internationally and that we allow a balancing of rights. And like I say, the fair practice test being added will in fact achieve that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Thring.
Chair, maybe just two questions. With regards to, obviously, the lawfully acquired, obviously this excludes pirate copies. And then, secondly, if somebody says, you know, I just borrowed the CD and it wasn't my intention to copy, you know, my laptop automatically made a copy, but you know, how do we enforce or how do we police that when perhaps the person actually knew what they were doing? And so, you know, there's the issue of pirated copies, you know, that lawfully acquired obviously excludes that. I just wanted to get clarity on that. And then just the issue of enforcement. And, you know, I suppose this comes down to, what is it, intent or negligence? How do you kind of, that kind of argument, you know, how do you know what the person, whether the person was wanting to borrow or whether the person willfully was wanting to make, you know, a copy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, in fact, when an exception is allowed, it speaks for itself, and any act, it is implied in an act that you cannot use an exception or a specific section in an act in order to justify a previous illegal action. So if this Act allows exceptions, it will only allow them in respect of something that you had a right to have in the first place. But for us to say and to define lawfully acquired ends up with unforeseen circumstances where we might have situations where it is acceptable to make the personal copy, but because of the strict nature of the definition, we now suddenly have something else. When it comes to monitoring and to enforcement, Look, I think this is the biggest problem when it comes to any legislation. And I think this is also where our piece of fair practice comes into play. Because if someone is making a personal copy, in other words, let's for instance make a different example. I want to play my CD in my vehicle, but my vehicle no longer has a CD player. So I make a copy, I shift the format. It is just for me. It's for my personal use. I'm going to put it in my car and listen to it when I drive to the shops or to work. No one is going to want to enforce that or climb into my car, you know, come to the garage and climb into everyone's cars and see what we have copied. Because it doesn't affect that it is an acceptable, fair practice use of the work. However, if we have a situation, and I'm thinking of a comedian who actually admitted this in his book, where he was making copies, trying to say it was for personal use, but then took the CDs and stood on a street corner and sold them for an income. You know, that is no longer fair practice. And that is then, of course, where enforcement will definitely come in. And so that would be something where your police would say, but wait a second, where are you getting these copies from? So enforcement is a question on its own, absolutely. But I would say that fair practice will also speak to that. So where it comes to because normally with monitoring and enforcement, it is something that comes to the attention of someone, and that is then reported and investigated. So that is a normal course of things. So if it is something that is just used by someone personally within the limits of fair practice, I doubt that this would be something that will necessarily have to be investigated. But if it comes to, for instance, an author's a person who wrote a textbook, it comes to their attention that there's like 50 copies of their textbook circulating on the campus of UCT. Of course, then that would then trigger enforcement and monitoring, because that would exceed fair practice. So again, I think the crux for me lies in fair practice. I don't know if on this perhaps Dr. Masocha wants to add anything, because I think it also speaks a lot to practical issues and the implementation of the Act, especially in respect of enforcement. And then I also know she actually told me something on pirated copies. So if I maybe may hand over to her, Chair, on that.
Thank you. Dr. Masocha?
Thank you, Advocate. Yes, I think in terms of the way that you have explained it and how the personal copies must be applied, the fairness aspect comes in and ensuring that that we don't cause deprivation by abusing this access to these works and the copies. So the restrictions that are provided in the exception is the confines that users are supposed to align themselves to, and piracy definitely is something that is a major challenge in South Africa, and one of the major concerns that authors and rights holders are having when they look at some of the provisions of the bill in terms of how these will be then exploited in terms of access that is not permitted. So in terms of the private copies, these are not meant to be copies that can be just circulated outside beyond your personal use as the person who's using them. And I think the definition of lawfully acquired was trying to define what that lawfully acquired looks like in terms of whether it's purchased and what is not, what is excluded and what is included. But then at the same time, just to add another context to it, this definition was adopted in the UK, and the UK it was also set aside because it had other unintended consequences in terms of the interpretation of law around it and its practical application. So the current act does have provisions that talk to personal users. So this was meant to just enhance and ensure that there are more restrictions around it, like your fair practice, applying the principle of fairness around the usage of the personal copies. So I will just stop there because I think that the advocate has already covered some of these aspects. I'll be repeating what she just said. But yes, enforcement of this becomes a serious problem because how then ensuring that the personal use does not extend beyond the limits of how they're supposed to be applied. So it's something that in terms of enforcement and the implementation of the Act could be explored further. Maybe the education around the usage of personal copies, educating the public about issues of this nature. Because sometimes if you are used to doing certain things, let me give an example. You hear about a book launch today. Somebody bought a book, they have it electronically, there is their copy. They then circulate it to a WhatsApp group, and the WhatsApp group then circulates it to other social media platforms. So that on its own is an abuse, and it also borders on other law enforcement issues of piracy and so on. But because of how things have been done or things are done, the public does not always know what is correct and what is not correct. So education also needs to come in on some of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You may proceed, Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chair.
Oh, I see. Wait, just before you proceed, there's a hand from Honorable Burns Ngamashe.
Thank you very much, Chair. My sense, Chair, is that there is a lot of education that needs to be done here. Precisely because we are dealing with the kind of community that is very poor. And I know this from practical experience when we were still students. With the level of ignorance that we had at the time, it was quite easy to go to the library and actually make photocopies of published books. Remember, it is done at the library, which is an institution that is supposed to be one of those that are educating students about the wrongfulness of doing what we were doing at the time, let alone going to an internet cafe where theirs would obviously be about profit making. So in this regard, there is a lot of extensive education that needs to be done. Otherwise, the law will be passed, but what's the point of passing a law that practically and functionally, it's not impactful. People still do things as if it's normal practice. So my sense is that there's a lot that really needs to be done at the level of communities, but not only communities, but also institutions of education at secondary, in fact at primary, secondary and cashier. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next is then the definitions of technological protection measure and technological protection measure circumvention device. In respect of technological protection measure, this is what the bill looked like. So the bill had a description in paragraphs A and B, and paragraph B was the one that made a link to non-infringing purposes. The proposed amendment took away that link in paragraph B, and it also added the words product and designed. The reason for the proposed amendment was, and I explained this yesterday, so I won't go into too much detail, was to try and ensure that we close loopholes in respect of technological protection measures. However, the concern was that it had such significant impact on the in practice in respect of how you can use a product, whether you can have third parties provide spare parts for that product or repairs to that product, whether there is transparency in auditing. That the proposal from myself and from the department is that the word product be retained. There was no concern about that. Designed was also part of the concern that it was making it too strict. It was broadening it way too much. That we rather retain paragraph A and bring back paragraph B, but add the word product. So Chair, just here, this is what the recommendation was there, retaining the wording of the bill before the advertisement, plus adding product. So Chair, I'll just stop there, I think, and then before I go on to the circumvention device definition.
Members? I don't see any hand. You can proceed, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we did discuss this yesterday, so perhaps the questions were in fact asked yesterday, but just in case. Technological protection measure circumvention device. Here, there was a first proposal to add the word or service, and we still recommend that or service be added. But then the circumvention device proposal also went further and indicated further examples of technological protection measure circumvention devices. And the concern raised by the public was that by including these descriptions in B and C, it goes too broad and you are restricting these three freedoms that was referred to by the public in respect of how you deal with the product, how you who may repair it for you, who may supply the parts, and so on. So the proposal, the recommendation from both the department and myself is that we retain the wording of the bill before the advertisement. In other words, it will only be paragraph A that is retained, but that we add the word or service. So I'll just stop there for now.
Thank you very much. Members, any inputs or clarity? I don't see any hands. You can proceed, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next, I want to actually take these three clauses together, 5, 7, and 9, together, and just explain to the members, and they read more or less the same, so I'm just going to show one. So what has happened here, this was the clauses that was referred specifically. This is one of the substantive referrals of the President, where provision was made for works where copyright in that work was assigned before this act, this bill would come into operation and is still exploited for profit. And we then wanted a share of that royalty that the copyright owner was still receiving at this point in time to be shared with the author. And as I explained yesterday, this sentiment in itself would pass constitutional muster. The problem is procedurally, it wasn't clear how to achieve it. And because of that, the subsection in itself does not pass constitutional muster at this point in time, including the delegation to the minister in B, which then, because the compromise that the committee of the Fifth Parliament tried was to say, well, let's put the sentiment in the bill and we then leave it up to the minister to go and make the process right. And the concern is that that Parliament is to some extent delegating plenary power, which is not constitutional either. So the proposal here, and the committee already agreed to this when the reservations were discussed, that these three, in respect of the three sections that I'll refer to now again here, 5, 7, and 9, these retrospective clauses must be deleted, the same as the delegations to the minister in respect of the retrospective clauses. Chair, I'll just pause there and then I'll speak to the gender-neutral drafting, but perhaps just on the retrospective clauses. Let me just maybe pause there for a moment.
Thank you. Honourable Tsaku.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I wanted to understand more, maybe to the advocate. These retrospective clauses, were they enabling the material of the originators or the content creators, that's with the, can call it a company, that company, when a person started to compile, let's say I'm Gwini here, I know how to sing and I approach a company. Let's say, I'm going to make an example, let's say Sony, and say, no, it's fine, come to us, we're going to produce some music and we're going to take it out there. Now, according to my understanding is that Mugini no longer has the rights of that song. It's that company, Sony, that is actually having that rights. And they will have that right all the time. They will have it forever. There's not a time where I think that Mugini will be able to, let's say, you will pay back the amount of money that you invested on me to produce the song and put it up there. And, you know, so there's the sentiments with many artists out there is that all their material is sitting now with those companies and they can't get their original work. So by deleting this, are you saying that you are reversing on the stance that all those artists or content creators who are there hungry and wanting their material, they won't be able to do that now? Are we trying to regress now in terms of the expropriation of that material from these companies so that the originators of their music, the originators of their content cannot help them anymore? Is it what the committee has already agreed on? Because I think I was not there when this position was actually taken. Many artists are interested actually in clause 5, 7, and 9. That is actually their main interest because all their material is with these companies and they are being exploited, and they are looking into this committee to ensure that they get back what actually due to them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is it Dr. Masocha or Advocate?
I think, Chair, if Dr. Masocha wants to add, but I think it's mainly a legal question. Chair, what this clause was doing was not expropriation. So if I may go to C, this is the crux of the clause. So what would happen here was, so the work that is with a copyright owner, with a company, if that company is still exploiting that work, still selling CDs and still getting profit on that, then what this clause would have done is to say that if there's still royalties being received on this work, then a share of those royalties must be paid over to the author. So this would be from the date of operation of this act. So that is what we have here. It was not about expropriating the work from the company and giving it back to the author. there would be a lot of other requirements there, and I think we would have run into some constitutional issues, because each work, you know, there are so many different things that apply. And in fact, the same constitutional issues, to an extent, came up on this clause as well. Because while the sentiment that an author may have sold their copyright, their work, sorry, to a copyright owner, to a company, and the company perhaps gave them R1,000, and that was it. Now the company has years on, if the song is used in a movie, they get royalties. If the song is used on radio, they get royalties. But the author of that song, the person who made that musical work, is not receiving any part of that royalty, because the agreement initially was, I'm paying you R1,000, I'm taking all the risk here, and that is what I'm now going to use this, and it's going to be my position to use, and I don't have to pay your royalties. That was the agreement, and the view was from the Committee of the Fifth Parliament was that this has put a lot of people in a very difficult situation, because they didn't have negotiation power back then, and so people could have been exploited. Now the problem that we then sat with is, was everyone exploited? So how will we determine whom of these authors were in fact exploited, and who simply said, well, I'm happy with this process? How will we differentiate between those two groups? The next step would be, the next question that came up was, what if the person who enters into this agreement, say Company A enters into agreement with the author, Company A then exploits the work for a bit, Company A says, oh, I don't know what to do with this work, I'm going to get rid of some of my work, and they sell it to Company B. Now, Company B is innocent in this situation. Company B had no agreement with the author, and Company B is now exploiting the work, and they found a bit of a market, and they're actually making some royalties on this work. Now, what is the link that we make between Company B and the author, and so on? So these kind of questions came up. And I mean, other questions were, how do we identify all these works? I mean, there could be hundreds and thousands of these works. How do we go about doing that? And because of that uncertainty, we have a procedural problem. And because we can't get past that procedural problem, we have a constitutional problem, because it is vague in law. We are putting out a law that is vague. We don't know how it will apply. We don't know to whom it will apply. We don't know how it will apply. The only thing that we knew was the when. That was the only thing we could have certainty on. And that then makes it against the rule of law. So that is why this section, this subsection, is problematic. It is very unlikely to pass constitutional muster. But we did not leave the committee just there by saying, oh, sorry, you know, this is unconstitutional and you can't do anything, because we do understand that the rationale for this is absolutely necessary. But what was undertaken by the department at the time in the Fifth Parliament, and again when this was discussed with this committee in the Sixth Parliament, is that the department is looking into this process. How will we identify who is affected? How will we identify in respect of the author, in respect of the company, and what would be the correct process, and how will we calculate? And that is something that the committee will then, by way of oversight, manage and make sure that the department does in fact come up with a process that can identify this. It will probably have to be put into law, but that can then be done by way of an amendment at that stage. So, yeah, like I say, it's not like we've left the committee without an option. The problem just is that because we don't have a process, and because there are so many questions that are not yet answered, we have vagueness in law, and we can't have a bill like that. Thank you, Chair. I see there's a hand up, but I also don't know if Dr. Masocha wants to add on this specific one.
I think let's take Honourable String, and then we can go to Dr. Masocha, so that she can cover both comments. Honourable String.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chair, so in essence, these particular subsections actually sought to protect abuse of the originators of a work, the authors of a particular work, whether it be a CD, a literary work, they sell it for, in the example that the advocate used, for 1,000 rand, and then that work later on draws huge royalties, which the author does not receive anything from. And so in a sense, the author or the originator here becomes exploited. So these subsections actually sought to somewhat mitigate against that exploitation. So my question then would be, if we're removing this from then I think I heard the advocate saying that we may need to look at some stage putting something into the bill. Will that be done? Because, you know, surely one would want to protect any form of exploitation of the authors or originators of our work.
Thank you, Honorable Thring. I think that was Honorable Thring's reception, Honorable Van der Merwe, that was a bit spotty there. Okay, let's take Honorable Tswako also then, before we go to Dr. Masucha. Honorable Tswako.
Sorry. Okay. No. I'm a bit yes, towards explaining, but I don't know what is the conclusion at the end in terms of, I think also in agreeing with the member saying in terms of probably now if you are removing these clauses, what actually happens now to the, you can put it in inverted commas, exploitation by those companies. What systems is going to be put in place so that the people who own that material benefit, or they receive their what process are we going to put in place now? Are we just going to put this into the you know the department itself? Yeah, of course. You'll have one thing we can ask as well is that Company A has an agreement with the artist, and then now who gives that Company A the authority to sell its work to Company B? Those are the kind of the exploitation that we need to be zooming at, because I think that many artists, majority of them, I don't know if maybe you had any consultation with many of them, they actually, this is what they're actually crying about, this exploitation. Now, the committee must not seek to really be on the side of the company which is want to exploit these artists. I will appeal. Let us actually relook at these clauses and ensure that we're on the side of the artists, because they're actually being exploited as we speak right now because of their material. I mean, of course, there are some deals that were made, I think back in the days, some of them, they were in exploitative in nature. So I wanted to check what are we saying now on this? What systems are we going to put in place? We're going to just delete it and then move on, leave it to the department to come up with something. What are we actually going to do? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Masucha.
The points that are raised by the honorable members are very valid, and this was one of the most debated areas in the bill with these clauses around the retrospectivity and the power of the minister to issue regulations and to conduct an impact assessment study to ensure that issues that are not clear are clarified and there's a system in place. It's a big policy issue, and Honorable Tswako is correct. There has been engagement with artists and authors and stakeholders in the creative industry who have raised concerns about these unfair practices, the exploitation of their works without being paid their rightful dues, and it's a big policy issue. It's a historical issue. It also talks to issues of unfair contracting, where people sign off their rights without knowing what they're signing off, or sometimes because of situations people find themselves in, an artist accepts a particular offer that is very, very minor compared to the benefits of the works. As it's exploited further, then they don't benefit further in terms of those. So it was a big context of the debate at the time, and it's still applicable today, because as you hear various artists talking to their situations, this is still an issue. In terms of what the department can do, it's something that maybe the committee can advise, but as advocate indicated, this was discussed even in this committee to say there should be a separate process that is put in place to ensure that this issue is not lost, because it is a very big challenge historically so, and currently as well, and that needs to be addressed. And I think that it's something that the committee can guide about, but the previous committee saw this as a measure that could be included in the bill to ensure that the issues of uncertainty that advocate was talking to, the legal questions that he was raising, are addressed with these provisions. But then at the same time, they have been raised by the president as part of his reservation in terms of the constitutionality of this bill. So we are open as the department to the instructions that we can get from the committee on what needs to be done in terms of the procedures to address the gap that removing this provision will leave, because it is it remains an issue. Thank you.
Advocate, I don't know if you want to add or whether you think we've covered sufficiently before we move on.
Sure, I think it is covered. Like I said, I think it becomes an oversight issue, because it is absolutely an issue. It is something, and perhaps this is, you know, a note can be just made that if in the end the committee agrees that these subsections from the three clauses be deleted, that perhaps the report on the bill also indicates this concern and that there needs to be further work. So just so that the issue doesn't get lost, okay, that would be just another proposal.
No, thank you for that. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So like I say, most of these are these three clauses, but I just want to also speak to the gender-neutral drafting in Clause 7. Chair, this is something where the committee will have to explain this in its report to the House as well, but there was a request that we correct the gender usage in the bill, in both bills, in fact. And there is precedent that a technical correction can be made on a bill that is referred back in terms of Section 79.1. And this would be that. It doesn't change the context, it just, or the content, but it just changes the bill to be in line with more acceptable gender drafting principles. This principle applies here. There's a number of clauses where it applies. I think perhaps if I can put it out there now, then when I come to it again, I don't have to go through it again. I don't think that there was an issue from the committee the previous time. It seemed that there was consensus about this being done when this was discussed. So let me just pause on gender-neutral drafting check in case I did not read the committee correctly.
I think you read the committee correctly, but let me see if there's any input on that from committee members. No hands. I think you may proceed then.
Thank you, Chi. So the same issue on retrospective is in respect of clauses 7 and 9, and so I'll skip that, and then gender-neutral drafting in respect of clause 11. So I will skip that as well. Then we have the introduction of new clauses. And the new clauses that are being introduced are changes to sections 11A and 11B. And all that is happening here is members will, if you remember the previous clauses from the bill, members will recognize this little ditty here. This was inserted in respect of all other types of work, but the bill did not insert it in respect of published editions or in respect of a computer program. And all that sections 11A and B then does is to add these three to these works as well. And the recommendation here was there was a concern about a spelling error, but that was just on the advertised wording. It wasn't on the bill, so there's no need for a correction. And our recommendation on this was just that these clauses be retained as advertised. And perhaps just to add here, this is an addition to the bill. We did ask permission for it to be added, and the rationale was that this resulted from the public consultations. So actually, let me just pause there.
Members? Okay, I don't see any hands. I think you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then, what did I do? There we go. Okay, so now we're getting to the big clause, clause 13. The clause 13 deals with section 12A, B, and so on, and this is the our exceptions clauses. Now, initially there was a proposal to delete these three paragraphs because of duplication. However, the public responded by saying you should not be removing these paragraphs from section 12A. 12A is your fair use clause, and the items listed in 12A are examples and will give guidance to the court as to what is regarded as fair use. So the proposal is that we in fact retain these paragraphs, and the paragraphs specifically are research private study. So this would be an example of fair use. Fair use would include research private study personal use, making a lawful copy of the work at a different time or with a different device. So this was the example where I said I put the CD on my flash drive to listen in my car. The other one is scholarship, teaching, and education. And the last one is preservation of and access to collections of libraries, archives, and museums. So these remain examples, and the proposal then is to not delete them, but to in fact retain them on the bill as is. Thank you, Joe. I'll just pause there.
Members? Okay, I don't see any hands. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next is, in fact, I think I want to do these two together. Talking about the name of the author, if it appears on the work. Okay, I'm trying something, it's not working, but I'll just scroll a bit. So there were two issues here. The one was adding, you know, the name of the author should be mentioned if it appears on the work. In other words, if it doesn't appear on the work, then you don't have to mention it. You don't have to go and look for the name of the author, just for fairness. But if it appears there, we need to protect that moral right of the author, and you need to mention it. Then there was a concern about whether it should be only when it is practicable. So I also spoke to this yesterday, so I will just give a quick reminder every time I get to one of these. In this instance, when we talk about 12A, our recommendation is that because this is a general clause, this is our fair use section, that we add the name of the author if it appears on the work, but that we don't include practicable. So in other words, it would then look like this. So that for the purposes of paragraphs A, which it gives our list, B, which gives our factors, the source as well as the name of the author shall be mentioned if it appears on the work. And that would be the recommendation, that it simply be retained as that. So Chair, I'll just pause there.
Members, any inputs? I think that's clear. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next one is then the addition of paragraph 12D. Now, what happened with paragraph 12D is that there was a request that the specific exceptions should be made subject to the fair use principle. Now, this is where we then proposed paragraph D being included to say that these subsections are subject to the principle of fair use, and it could be determined by the factors as set out in 12A. The public then pointed out that if you do this, you are in fact removing the hybrid situation totally, and you are in fact nullifying some aspects, if not all, of the specific exceptions. The specific exceptions have their own fairness tests, and if you then add the principles from the general principle, so to speak, then you are first off making it very unclear about when the exception actually is available. So a person has to now look at a number of criteria instead of just at the section before them. And you're making it almost impossible for a person to make use of the exception. And the other argument was that each exception, a specific exception, because it has its own inbuilt fairness criteria, that should be sufficient, and you don't have to bring it all under the general principles as well, and that is exactly why you don't just have the general section 12A, which speaks about fair use, and we give principles and it can apply to any action, but we also have specific exceptions because we want to make it clear that in certain instances this is in fact what would be fair. So our recommendation is that we, in fact, do not layer the exceptions, layer the requirements in respect of exceptions, and that paragraph D, as proposed, rather be not included in the bill. So I'll just pause there again, Chair.
Thank you, members. Any hands? None. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next is the issue of fair use and extent justified by the purpose in respect of quotations. Now, in fact, I think I'll speak to three things here on quotations, fair practice and the extent justified by the purpose, as well as the issues of the whether to mention the name as far as is practicable, and the fact that the name be if it is on the work. So I spoke to it yesterday as well, and I think let me start with the first one, the fair use, fair practice versus extent justified by the purpose. When we considered the treaties, this exact wording of the treaties, in respect of quotations, Bern Article 10 sub 1 says, requires both shall not exceed the extent reasonably justified by the purpose and shall be compatible with fair practice. So it is our proposal that both, in fact, be included in respect of the exception for quotations. So on quotations, you will have both tests. When you do a quote, when you quote a work, you will have to make sure that the extent of your quote is not exceeding the extent reasonably justified, and secondly, that your quote is compatible with fair practice. And then also, when you mention the name of the author, we had that, you know, if it wasn't practicable, you didn't have to do it, but the proposal is to delete that because the Act already has this exception of quotation, and the Act does not provide for practicable. And we would propose that we rather retain this because it is an exception, it is making it is using the work of someone else without even their knowledge necessarily, and therefore the name or still the name of the author, if it appears on the work, should be mentioned in that quotation. So I'll just pause there in respect of quotation.
Members, any input? Okay, I don't see any hands. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then the next would be subsection 12B1B. I'm not going to say too much about it here because it is we propose that it be moved to the section that deals specifically with education. and I will speak to it when we get it there. The next one is in respect of, and again, I know that the wording was heavily criticized. We should not be referring to it as ephemeral rights, but just it has become something that we say and we know what we're talking about. So this is the ephemeral rights section. And the proposal was that we use the Canadian Act's wording, but there were so many unintended consequences, wording that would have had to change, things in practice that's not yet there. We didn't have a specific collecting society or an archive. And the proposal is that we revert to the wording of the bill prior to the advert. And the wording of the bill prior to the advert has a number of the issues that we have in the Canadian Act. In the Canadian Act's wording, it's already in our bill. So we make provision for it must be destroyed before the expiration of a period of 6 months. We've got that a longer period may be agreed. We've got that if it's an exceptional documentary nature, it may be preserved. What we have is now here is that it will be the archives of the broadcaster, but you may not use it for another purpose without consent. So more or less, it is contained there, but it doesn't. There's maybe a number of things that the Canadian Act example could be used for furtherance of developing policy around this. But our recommendation is that happens separately from the development of this bill, and that the department rather comes back with that policy and a bill that speaks to that policy. So, Chair, I'll just pause there for now.
Thank you, members. No hands for clarity. You may proceed, advocate. We have a hand from Honorable Thring. Honorable Thring.
Chair, I think that the use of the word ephemeral certainly can cause some confusion, particularly for those where English is not the first language. My understanding is that it's something which is temporary or has a short lifespan, shortened period to it. And so why can't we just not make it very clear what that particular lifespan is? And if necessary, change the use of the word ephemeral to something which is understood by, I think it was Honorable Tsuako who raised this point, change that to something which is understood by everybody. Why use the word ephemeral where, you know, we could just say, you know, that which is temporary or find the appropriate word which is understood by the ordinary man. And I think that if we are able to also put some time frames, you know, what is short? What is the short time frame? What is something that is going to come to an end soon? Is it, you know, is it 30 days? Is it 60 days? Is it 1 year? You know, there's also no clarity with regards to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mbuyane.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Honorable Dring has covered me. I just wanted to check whether we retain the 60 or you retain the 30 or you extend to 60 days, the ephemeral period. Thank you.
Thank you, advocate.
Thank you, Chair. I think both these speak to a period, and the period that we have is the wording of the Act speaks about a period of 6 months immediately following the date of making of the reproduction. This period may be extended if it is agreed to by the owner of the relevant part of the copyright in the work. So the proposal is for it to be 6 months. And then just in respect of ephemeral rights, yes, that is definitely something that is confusing. And it was simply used because I think, I don't know if the Canadian Act maybe has that as a heading, but even the public pointed out that it is not correct to refer to it as that. I apologize. I just thought to use it because it brings a certain section to mind. but we definitely don't use that wording in the wording of the bill at all. We simply speak about the reproduction of a work by a broadcaster is allowed without the permission of the copyright owner, as long as it is destroyed before the expiration of a period of 6 months. And this is then where the short period comes in. I don't know perhaps if Dr. Masocha might want to add something on this specifically, Chair.
Dr. Masocha?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the wording from the Canadian model, they do have the word ephemeral. I think in their context, in ephemeral recordings, they do refer to ephemeral. And even the public submissions that refer to this act use the word ephemeral. So it's a term that is in the Canadian Act. Maybe the difference is whether you call it rights or exception or recordings, but in their context, it is ephemeral recordings. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Back to your advocate. Oh, I see there's another hand again from Honorable Mbiani.
Yes, Chairperson, thanks. I think the clarity of short period, what is short period? The period we're talking about is 30 days, 60 days, 6 months. What is short? Short of how long? Because that is what we must clarify, because if it's a process of a short period, it's a 30 days, a month or two. But 6 months is a long period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate?
Thank you, Chair. I've made a note in respect of 6 months, and I think that if I may ask that we come back to the committee on that. I don't want to just answer off the cuff. It is definitely a policy decision. But I know that we have received some submissions in respect of the period as well. Perhaps we can just give the committee more detail on that at a next occasion, specifically in respect of the period. Okay. Our focus is more on whether to use the Canadian Act wording or the current bill's wording.
Okay, so we'll flag that. You may continue.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next one is again about the name of the author, if it appears on the work and as far as is practicable. And this deals with, let me just go to that one so we can see what wording it is that we're dealing with. We're talking here about reproduction in the press by broadcasting of a lecture, address or other work. And the, apologies, am I now at the right one? Yes. So here it is simply that we propose that it be, I'm lost, I apologize. Now that's ephemeral rights. Okay. So on D, the it was just again the issue of appearing on the work and that we delete the word practicable. Again, this was something that appeared in the Act already and therefore we don't propose adding practicable. I'll just maybe pause on 12B1D in case there is any comments on that.
Thank you, members. I don't see any hands. Advocate, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The next one is in respect of paragraph E, and again it deals with the issues of practicability and the name of the author. And fair practice and extent justified by the purpose. Let me see if there was anything else. The same, fair practice, it goes to both. Okay, so I'm going to speak to ES1. I think it will be easier because the issues are exactly the same and the proposal is also exactly the same. So the first proposal is that we delete paragraph 1, which speaks about reproduction in the press of current events. And the reason for this is that it is already repeated in section 12, capital A. And then in respect of paragraph 2 and 3, which speaks to the reporting of current events and providing current information. So current is the crux here. If we look at the Berne Convention, Article 10 bis, there it only uses the extent justified by the information purpose. So in other words, we are explaining the type of information in our in the body of our paragraph here, and then we propose that the test should be extent justified by the purpose, so that we are aligned with the Berne Convention. The same in respect of current information, it's in fact the same article that deals with this as well. Then in respect of as far as is practicable, the Act already has this exception, and the Act does not provide for practicality. It requires that the moral rights of authors be recognized. So our proposal here is that we require the name be mentioned, the name of the author be mentioned at all times if it appears on the work, and then that the test be extent justified by the purpose as per Article 10 bis of Bern. So I'll just wait there, pause there for a bit, Chair.
Thank you, members. Honourable Twaku.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I wanted to say to the advocate, when you're developing these bills, isn't there a template or something that says maybe it must conform to something like this, and fairness and practical as possible, tailor-made for that country and all of that. These uses of these, Berlins and Sweden, are they not tampering with, with the fairness and then all of that? Are we not able to develop this thing such a way that, it's actually fair, it's actually working on us, and, I don't know. I was just interested on that because, we're talking about all these Beijing treaties and all these other ones, but are we not able to develop these things by ourselves and say it's going to work and develop our own work, That's actually that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Look, the thing is that we do try and take whatever the treaty proposes, and we look at that as best practice. In fact, when I say we, I mean the department looked at the treaties as best practice when they developed the policy that informed this bill. And then when we look at the wording of the bill, we go back to the policy, and the policy would speak to the convention. So in other words, it's already something that was made applicable to South Africa by way of a policy that informs how copyright in South Africa should work. The reason for using specific wording and perhaps looking at international agreements is when legislation is interpreted by our courts are allowed to look at international application of or interpretation by other countries, by other courts. So if a word in law has already an established meaning, it helps us if we put that into our legislation, because it already has a history of what would a court say is extent justified by the purpose. For instance, we already know that extent justified by the purpose, our courts will look at how much of the work did you use when you quote it? How much of the work did you use when you made a reproduction of a work at a current event? For instance, at this current event, it might be an opera, and that is being broadcast because we say Pretty Hende from South Africa is doing an opera, and it is news, and we're very happy for her. And the question then is, what would be the test if the newscasters sent out her whole performance? Then we can say, whoa, that is not an extent justified by the purpose. The purpose was to tell the country that Ms. Yende is performing at this big opera house, and we just wanted a snippet. We just needed to see her on the stage, and that would have been enough for the purpose to say that she was there. So extent justified by the purpose already has that meaning. So it just makes it a bit easier. Because for us to go and look for words that have the same meaning, you run the risk that a court might say, but why did you not use that wording? Are you trying to say that it means something different? So it's a very delicate balance, because we need to also try and make sure that our laws are readable, you know, to any person. You shouldn't have a law degree to be able to lead, to read our laws. And then I might just maybe perhaps say, you know, I've looked at laws from countries like the UK and from Australia, and our laws are very much drafted in plain language compared to those countries. So we really do try from our side to make our laws as simple as possible, straightforward as possible, because we make them for non-lawyers. They're not supposed to be made for lawyers. But yeah, so we use the wording from the treaties because of that background that is already there. Thank you, Chair.
Can I just write quickly?
Yes.
I wanted to, you see, the thing why I'm saying this, Chair, now is the fact that we should be very careful to use the other schools of thought of other countries, because it's the same mistake that we're actually currently doing in terms of choosing an economic policy that actually is not really working here in the country. We should be innovative, look at the needs of our people, and look at the things that we want to drive home, a fairness, you know, because the law is supposed to be working for us, you know. Because we can defend, if they say that we've coined something new, we can tell them that it's not working internationally, but in South Africa it works, and our people are actually happy about it. So I'm just trying to say that let us be very, very cautious to use all these international wordings and international schools of thought, whereas they are going to drag us, they will take us back as the country, because you'll find that some of those treaties or some of the schools of thought are actually going to be counter-revolutionary in terms of achieving fairness for our people. So I'm just saying that the people who are doing the draft, please be actually cautioned. Look, let's think, let's have a thinking thought about the current SA, you know, the situation itself. Yes, we can learn from there, but let's not adopt. And let us be cautious when we adopt what is out there, which cannot work here in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. I think that was more a comment, not so much a question.
Yes.
So if I can move on to the next one.
Yes, thank you.
Which brings us to translation. Paragraph F, dealing with translation. And again, the same issues come up here. There was some just a changing of the wording. Instead of saying done for commercial, for purposes that are not commercial, the change is to done for non-commercial purposes. Adding the words for the furtherance of language and culture, which came up from public submissions. And then the issue again of fair practice versus extent justified by the purpose and using and or. So with translations, we recommend, this is where yesterday I explained that Bern does not specifically provide for translations, but we can bring it in under Article 9 of Bern, which deals with specific exceptions. And then we must comply with the requirements of Article 9. And if we look at the guideline, and Article 9 actually just sets out the three-step test. And if we then look at the guideline to Bern, and we look at how it interprets the word fair practice, that is exactly what Article 9 says. So the proposal is that we use the word, the test here, as fair practice in respect of translations. And then, as I explained yesterday, apologies, this paragraph should be moving a bit so that it just makes sense. As I explained yesterday, initially I was of the view that one stood by itself, two stood by itself, three stood by itself, but it's not correct. All three must be present in order for this exception to apply. And because of that, we then need the word and. So it is clear that it must be provided that such translation is, one, done for non-commercial purposes, two, used for one of these purposes, and three, if communicated to the public, must be for non-commercial purposes. So, Chair, that is our proposal in respect of translations. Let me maybe just pause there for a bit.
Thank you very much. Can I see if there are any hands? No hands, advocate. We want to take a break, a body break in 2 minutes' time. Let's see what if we can handle the next one and then take a break. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, the next one is in respect of personal copies, and it may or may not be something that will allow us to take a quick break. Chair, we've already discussed most of this with the definition in respect of lawful purposes, or lawfully acquired, I apologize. And there was a lot of amendments proposed in respect of personal copies because of the deletions to Section 12, Capital A. And if it is, if our recommendation that we don't delete that is taken into account, then this whole portion here falls away because that is already in Section 12, Capital A. Then the other aspect was that the lawfully acquired be removed here because we've got fair practice, and that is the recommendation that we have in respect of personal copies. Again, Byrne doesn't specifically speak to personal copies. There's not an article that says personal copies, and then you can see exactly what it means. Article 9, again, deals with the specific exceptions, and it falls under that. And if we look at the requirements there, it's the three-step test, and fair practice is the test according to the guideline that complies best with three-step test. So it is our proposal that Section 12A's wording be retained in Section 12A so that we delete this portion here in this Section 12B, but it goes to Section 12A. We delete the lawfully acquired aspect thereof, and we don't have to say personal use. Such use, it refers to the use going before it, being compatible with fair practice. In other words, that when you, and I know there was a concern raised before in respect of personal copies, and that it is broad, but if we have fair practice included in here, then it means that we must comply. Your personal copy, when you make that personal copy, you will have to comply with the three-step test in each copy that you make. So, Jay, that is on personal copies, and then I will pause there.
Thank you, members. I don't see any hands, so I think we can take a break, members. We will then reconvene. We will take a body break, and we'll reconvene at 11:15. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.